Welcome to the Postpartum is Forever podcast. My name is Keturah Stoltenberg. I am a mother of two young men and a postpartum doula. This podcast is dedicated to all mothers and is a place to hear honest, relatable conversations with the intention of helping mothers feel seen, heard, supported, and valued. I believe that postpartum is forever and that sharing our stories is a powerful way that we facilitate connection with ourselves, our children, and our community. Thank you for being here. Please note, this episode shares an experience of stillbirth. Please use discretion when deciding if this episode is right for you. Today, a mother named Fatima shares her experience of birthing three children, whereby one of them, her daughter, was born still. While this is understandably a sensitive and painful topic, Fatima speaks so gracefully about her beautiful, serene, and intimate birth in which she met her baby girl and then bravely farewelled her. This topic can trigger the pain of loss, particularly the loss of a child, and I ask that you listen with self-compassion and reach out for support if this has been your experience. Fatima talks openly about the silence that happens after birth, when your baby is born still, the truth that your body will still go into a physiological postpartum phase after losing a baby, the need to give your body time to rest and recover, and the emotional challenges that arise with this. Fatima beautifully brings light into what could be a very heavy conversation with her softness and inner wisdom, calmness and knowing. Be kind to yourself, mamas, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. Fatima.
Hi.
Hi, Keturah.
So nice to reconnect with you.
It's a blessing.
We used to have some beautiful conversations, didn't we?
We certainly did. You were quite the deep thinker and conversationist, I would say.
Yeah. I certainly always walked away feeling a lot richer from having spent time with you. So I'm so grateful to reconnect. So could you introduce yourself, how many children you have, and maybe a little bit about your profession as well?
I'm a mother to two boys. One is about a year and a 3 months, and the other is about 4.5 years old. I've also a mother to a baby girl up in heaven. In addition to my main role, being a mum, I am also an academic and a researcher at a university working in medical science and medical research. And I'm also the director of a social enterprise that is trying to disseminate information and advocacy for families who have actually lost their babies and providing a place of support or a place of solace. They can find like-minded individuals who've got lived experience of baby loss or infertility, birth trauma, particularly those from diverse communities.
So interesting. Yeah, I can see why we used to have such enriching conversations. With your birthing space, would you recommend having mothers and mother-in-laws? How did you feel? Did you feel like you were also holding space for them as well? Or were you able to go within to birth your baby?
Right. So I guess in my first experience, for who I was then, and for the way my relationships were with both of them, I actually felt it was important to give them that opportunity. I really did. Like, I actually felt that they, it was really important for them to be present. And I also wanted to be gracious enough to allow them the space to be there. However, in hindsight, after I understood what birthing was really like and what the postpartum space was really like for me anyway, I would recommend that who you select to be in your birthing space is really thought about. The birthing space is a very sacred space. It's meant to be your space and it's be an empowering and safe space. And the energies and vibrations from others, not only your birthing partner or
birthing support person, whether it's your mother-in-law or sister, but also the healthcare professionals as well. Every single one of their energies and vibrations in that space can really impact your journey through birthing. And I would say that before you are people pleasing and creating space for others, try and really factor in how important this moment for you is going to be.
Yeah, I couldn't have put it better myself. Yeah. Yeah, so it's not so much who's there, but what impact are they going to have in your sacred space?
That's right.
Yeah.
Are they going to be supporting you? Do they understand what birth is? Do they know how to hold space for you to be able to do your thing? So, yeah, I think it's really important that you are selective about who you allow into that space.
So if we move on to postpartum, you didn't do a lot of planning for the postpartum number one, would you say?
Or? Look, I did a bit of research as to what I thought I would need. So things like my nutrition, understanding what I thought I would need, but the practicalities of it was very, very difficult because I obviously had never had a newborn, so I didn't realise how much time they actually consumed. So although I'm quite well versed as to what to eat, I couldn't get up and make those meals for myself, right? So I did often find myself slacking off a little bit. My mother was great in that space where she did provide some of the cultural broths that are known to be warming and nurturing and are universal in the way they sort of help mothers sustain their nourishment afterwards, especially for breastfeeding. There was a lot of that sort of support. But admittedly, that only happens for the first week postpartum or 2 weeks postpartum. It's important to understand that I needed that for about a year or longer, okay? Especially because I did choose to breastfeed for about 2 years. And so I really felt that I needed that preparation to keep going for me. And things like exercise and, you know, other sort of spaces of sleep, mental health, I kind of outsourced a little bit of that and I was fumbling my way through it. Like I knew I needed the support and then I just tack it on because it was an experience that wasn't completely prepared for, but I was learning on the job.
Yeah.
And I could have saved myself a lot of misery and had I had a deeper appreciation of what I really truly needed.
Yeah. It's one of those things though, isn't it? Sort of in hindsight, you know, these things, it's, you've kind of got to live the experience before you truly understand what you need.
Yeah.
And that's why I hear from a lot of mums second time around or third time around, because they're like, I want this to be different.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess that's where I found myself as well. Like with my second and third births, I was better prepared and I had mentally and physically budgeted for it and financially, and knowing that this is what the tax was going to look like on my life as a whole, and these are the sorts of resources that I was going to employ to ensure that I could mother with abundance, right? Mothering with abundance, mothering with a level of empowerment, and not feeling like I'm literally scraping the barrel from exhaustion and just spent, you know?
Yeah.
Just completely spent.
So what would you say maybe to a mother that's thinking postpartum care is a luxury and that it's something that maybe it's a bit extravagant?
Oh, goodness me. That is a question that I've become really passionate about. Anytime I find anyone's planning for a baby, I really emphasize the importance of ensuring that they really budget for that postpartum space. And when I say budget, it's not just financially, it's also time. You need support, like physical people, and also really planning around it. Having a mother in her optimal state is so essential for how the family unit is going to operate and how that baby is going to thrive. So for me, it's actually a non-negotiable. I'm beyond explaining to people why I would spend a certain amount of money on, you know, somebody like you actually, and somebody who is a doula and who offers, you know, the beautiful massages that we so need after giving birth, and the nourishing food services, with the warming broths, with gut-friendly nutrition behind it. So it's not just, it's like really well thought out as to what a postpartum woman would actually need. And I feel like it's really a non-negotiable. If you find that you can prepare for your postpartum and put away a little bit at a time, it is an investment, but it does pay off, because your physical mental recovery is a lot better and a lot faster, and you can actually be a bit more present for your baby.
Yeah.
And when you see your baby, is you're looking forward to those connection times, that you're looking forward to the feeding times, you're looking forward to the changing of nappies rather than dreading it because of how exhausted and how spent you are. And how achy you are. You're in pain. A lot of people forget that every part of your body is still battered and bruised. So it's really important having a soothing touch and soothing foods and a soothing space. And sometimes if you can't create that for yourself and you don't have a supportive partner that can do that for you, or some family and friends, then you do need to outsource and to create that village. Unfortunately, you do need to budget for it, you know.
Yeah, you spoke about that so eloquently. Yeah, but it really is a no-brainer.
Yeah, it really is.
The bottom line.
Yeah.
And even if we do have supportive family in our life, it's still not enough, because we also want our partner to be available for us and not just to be available for other siblings or for cooking or for doing all the chores.
Yeah.
We want to enjoy and kind of connect and bond along with them. So somebody that's supporting the family takes the load off the other family members as well.
I agree with that. And I think that they are often forgotten in the fact that they've also become parents and they need support too.
Yeah.
So a lot of the attention is placed on the mother, and not enough. Can I also put a caveat in? But then they get literally nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and they are shouldering quite a lot, and I need to acknowledge that. So I think it's the idea needs to be focused on both parents and what they both need, and being able to really think about the postpartum phase being a time of vulnerability for the whole family. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, totally agree. Okay, speaking of vulnerability, are you able to kindly share with us your second birth experience? How was the pregnancy for that experience? Was everything going as planned?
Yeah, so I guess, like I alluded to earlier in the conversation, we're not planners when it comes to these things. So pregnancy number two was also a welcome surprise, and things were going swimmingly until they weren't, I guess. So I physically was fine, and I was physically carrying okay, and then we got some news that things were not going okay for our baby, and then as we sort of went along, you know, we were getting grimmer and grimmer news about, you know, whether I'd be able to still carry to term, and whether my baby would be you know, needing a bit of help when they first were born. It was mostly to do with their lungs and a lot of fluid around them. That was a bit difficult to sort of navigate, but because I have a medical background, I guess, or medical science background, I was very on board with it. I'm like, okay, it was very matter of fact. I got a lot of support in the sense that I have a great healthcare team around me, and I was quite spoiled for choice in terms of the education that I was given to me and the support that I was given to me. But yeah, I guess the second pregnancy was a very trying time, because you just, I guess you don't know what the outcome is going to be, and there's a lot of unknowns. Yeah.
At what point, if I can ask, did you become aware that something wasn't right?
It was really further on in my pregnancy. It was probably around maybe the 6 month mark. Yeah. So, as we're going to all the scans and stuff, that's when, I guess things became a bit more, but it wasn't like, what's the word? It wasn't, for me, it wasn't catastrophic. Like, even though they were giving me the info, I was still very hopeful, and they were too, to some extent as well. And so I was like, well, whatever the outcome is, I'm still going to be taking care of my baby in the best possible way. So I was very accepting of whatever, and whatever is, because sometimes they don't even know, you know. So
yeah, that's true. So your baby girl was born.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So unfortunately, I was going in for a bit of a routine scan, and I got those dreaded words, you know, that there was no heartbeat. And it was during a time where we were in lockdown. We're up on the northern beaches were in lockdown because there had been a COVID outbreak. Mm. And so it impacted, you know, the North Shore, and the hospitals here had really, really strict policies. So I actually had to go in for my scan on my own. And I, you know, I just thought it was going to be a routine scan. They were just going to sort of update me on how things are going. And I didn't expect to hear those words. And that was quite a very surreal sort of experience, where like time kind of stops and blurs and twists and turns, and you're thrusted into this parallel world, but you really are, because you almost don't think, your legs are no longer on earth, if that makes sense. You're just up in this space.
A quick word from me. I trust you are enjoying this episode. I know that if you are listening to this podcast, you are likely a woman who deeply cares about her mothering practices. I invite you to sign up to my email list found on my website, motherhoodwithkatura.com.au, for semi-regular emails that include blogs, recipes, and information relating to a variety of motherhood topics. If you are pregnant or know someone who is, head over to my website and sign up to receive your free copy of the postpartum checklist and important contacts list. And so that we can get these conversations out to more mothers, I'd be grateful if you could like, share, and review this podcast. It really does make a difference. Back to the episode.
And so the next moments were, the receptionist, or, you know, came and sat with me, because she had been a midwife apparently in another life before she worked for this doctor. And she just sat with me until, because she knew my partner wasn't with me, and I needed to wait to go get further, like another scan, to just confirm that the little ultrasound that he was using in the suite could be confirmed with something a little bit more high tech, had higher resolution, I guess. So she sat next to me, and that was interesting, because I didn't sit inside the reception space where all of the other blooming families who were ready to go in to get their, tick off their next time point for their screening, and to sort of talk about what their plans were for their baby and where they're going to give birth and what their birth preferences were. So I sat out. I don't know why I left that room. Like, I had left the doctor's office to go and wait, but I waited in the corridor, and then all of a sudden I see her come and sit right next to me, and she didn't look me in the eye. She was just looking straight ahead, and then she just put her hand on my leg, and she's like, look, I remember her saying to me, I don't know what you're experiencing, right? But she goes, I've been a midwife for decades, and I can tell you that the next moments in your life are going to be quite defining for you. So try and ground yourself so that you're mindful of what you're going to do next. It's very interesting, because it was like an angel had popped out of nowhere to sort of bring me back into my body, if that makes sense. And look, I went down the corridor, and I had this, sonographer do the next lots of scans, and, you know, they confirmed that there was no baby there. And unfortunately, I had to come home and then share the news with, their father. And I was given the option of either going home and waiting it out to see whether my baby would trigger, you know, natural labor and the birth process, or actually get it induced medically, you know, down the corridor. And I remember my OB saying to me, he's like, most women would actually want to go down the corridor right now and be induced and get it over and done with. He goes, but I know you're going to choose the second option. And I was like, oh, okay, that's quite, you know.
Insightful.
Insightful, yeah. I had built a bit of rapport with him. He's an incredible, incredible obstetrician. And so, yes, I did take the second option and I waited it out. And I must admit, I can't express to you in words the feeling of being, of carrying death inside your living body. It's just something I can't put into words, and I have thought about often, like, how was I carrying a dead being inside me? And I was quite pregnant, like, you know, 7 or 8 months. So how do I... It's a very surreal thing. And I also would like to share that I had my little toddler who was about he's about 18 months old. And I remember before I went to my appointment, he actually said to me, baby, like he could see a baby up in the sky. Like, so I was breastfeeding him and he pulled away from me and just pointed up to say there's a baby in the room. And I was just like, that's so strange. And he kept saying baby and he was waving at the baby. And it was just him and I in the room. And I just felt like that was when I found out a few days later that I had lost the baby. It just sort of, I don't know, it was very interesting.
Moments you can't explain.
Yeah, that was a moment I couldn't explain, I guess. And, yeah, and unfortunately, you know, your baby gets buried and all those sorts of things.
So did you go back to the hospital soon or did you wait it out for a bit?
I waited it out and then, you know, about a week later, it was when things naturally started to happen. I actually I shouldn't say naturally, because my doctor kept calling to check in and to see, you know, how I was going pretty much daily, if not twice daily. I was getting that level of contact. And then I was offered actually a pill that can actually, you know, ripen up the process a little bit. And I took it on the day 6. And pretty much the next morning I was out, yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's I love sharing it in some ways because I feel like there needs to be a level of awareness and understanding of what families can go through when they experience a loss at this term, I guess, and what people forget or it doesn't even cross their mind is that you're a pregnant woman and that your body's going to actually react in the same way to some extent. So after I had delivered my baby, and I actually had to deliver my baby, a lot of people, there's no understanding that when your baby dies, it doesn't just magically disappear.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't just go into thin air. It doesn't resolve. Because whenever I shared my story, people were like, what's that detail about, you know? And it's like, you need to deliver your baby. And most of us, when we're delivering our baby, we're looking forward to meeting our children, our babies. And so there's a like an internal intrinsic drive to help along with that birthing process, you know? And a lot of the motivation that you get from your healthcare team is because, oh, you're closer to meeting your baby.
Yeah,
you know,
there's a lot of joy surrounding the... Yeah, the experience.
That's
yeah.
right. A lot yeah. of joy and a lot of, you know, anticipation, mm-hmm. I guess, of what your baby's going to look like, how are they going to sound like, what are they going to smell like. I experience that still.
Mm.
And it's uncomfortable to share because I wasn't teary. I wasn't sad. I was so thrilled to be able to meet her. And in the birthing space, it's still very empowering, and it was a bit of a redeeming birth compared to my first one because it was just me, her father, and the midwives and doctor, because obviously, you know, they already knew my baby has passed, there wasn't as many intrusions. So we were kept in a dimly lit space, and it was just so serene and beautiful. And I remember calling her name out as I delivered her, and it was such an empowering birthing experience, even though my baby wasn't alive. And I still got to hold her and cuddle her and, you know, speak to her and spend time with her. And for me, that was really helpful.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, because I think you've raised a couple of things in that there is kind of this silence about what happens in between if someone has lost a child.
Yeah.
So they're pregnant and then they bury their child, but how does the baby actually enter the world? So that's good. And also I think that there's a lot of silence about this because it can be perceived as being something horrible and awful and something that you want to just forget about and not want to immerse yourself in because you just want to get the procedure over with so that you can say goodbye and move on. But if you, as you've so beautifully described, it was quite a beautiful birth, an undisturbed, peaceful, beautiful moment that you had with your little girl. What was her name?
Her name was Aya.
Aya
is a name that we chose for her. It means sign in Arabic when translated, but it's also a Japanese name and also a Hebrew name, and can mean bird in both of those languages. And for me, because I'm Muslim and I attempt to practice my faith, you know, we believe that children who pass are, it's a term called birds of heaven. And so regardless of what the child's faith is or what the child's, you know, in what circumstances they're born and dying in, they're all elevated to heaven, and they're actually waiting for their parents at the gates of heaven. And so we thought that was quite a fitting name, and also a sign for us to sort of remember that. And we often forget this mainly because of the images that we see on our socials, and we're all, you know, we've all been sort of indoctrinated, I guess, if the word is, of what pregnancy and birth is, and no one really wants to talk about one major outcome of pregnancy, which is death. And so for me, I took that experience as, you know, this is a sign that we need to always think of birth and death as being closely aligned, and it's a privilege to be able to carry life. And I drew on my faith where a woman who has given birth and has lost her baby, she is highly revered and esteemed. She's almost like the mother of all mothers, because the pain of losing that baby is so great. And I often find myself lost for words to express to people how painful it is, because unless you've actually gone through it, and even myself, like, I considered myself an empathetic person and I thought I would understand, but it's not until you kind of go through it that you're like, okay, I now understand why this is such a huge challenge and test of this world. So,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. Can you express how you felt in those early sort of hours and days? Or did you feel quite numb and surreal?
In the birthing suite, I felt very empowered. It was like that redeeming birth that I mentioned earlier. And I felt in my own experience that I was given the space to just be with her and to be as a family and to sort of do what we needed to do, right? However, this hasn't been the experience of a lot of people that I've interviewed through my work at the Still Nest, the Still Nest podcast. They've expressed that during those initial moments, they were not given that, and it has really impacted them. And it's decades later, and they're still in a lot of unhealed pain from those initial moments. I was given those moments, which was really helpful. But then it was literally the next day, I'm discharged. I come home and prepare for a funeral and for her burial, quickly have a shower, grab a gown, and get out of the house within a few hours. In Islam, we love to bury our dead quickly. It's the way we honor them, because we also feel like their spirit's still around, and it's the most respectful things to get them quickly covered and back into their resting space as soon as possible. So for me, it was very quick. But we were surrounded by friends and family for about 3 days because we had an open house with restrictions because of COVID as well. And I think that was really helpful. They allowed things to be light and calm, and we felt really loved as a family because, you know, everyone that joined us was genuinely open to understanding, you know, why, you know, about the loss and how they could be there to support us. But then after everyone's gone, then you're left with your grief and your pain. And I feel like for me, it was a bit of a slow burn. I actually planned to go back to work, and I did go back to work a week later. So can you imagine a mother who has birthed a live child going back to work a week later? Yeah. So imagine birthing a dead child and then going back to work a week later. I was not in the right headspace. I really wasn't. And nobody tapped me on the shoulder to slow me down because nobody else knew what to do. Even HR from work, they were super supportive, but they were happy to go with whatever I wanted, but I didn't even know what I wanted.
Do you think you were just trying to distract yourself or to get back into some sort of normality, as it were? Or
I felt like it was the expectation to go back to work because I've got no baby. I've got no baby, so I'm not obviously, you know, breastfeeding and having sleepless nights. I should just get back to work because why should I take time off work if there's no reason to? Like, that was where my headspace was at. I've got no baby, might as well go back to work. But little did I know that my body was still acting like it was postpartum. So I would be waking up 3 to 4 hours every night thinking there was a newborn in my room crying. So my body was still adjusting to the fact that I wasn't pregnant, that there was no real live baby. I just lasted a couple of days, and then I just didn't go back to work for several months, actually.
Yeah. In that time, and this is, you know, to maybe help another mum out there who's going through this early stage of grief, what would you say has helped you to heal, and to what comforted you, what helped you? Or do you think it's very different for different women?
I guess it definitely is a very personalized and unique experience to each person. However, there are some universalities that you can draw from. I already had some healthy habits, I must admit. Like, I like to journal, and I like to walk, and I like to exercise. And there was already some little things in my life that I was already doing as basic habits. However, they were not enough during this time. I really did need to speak to someone that had gone through it, because even the way I reacted in the birthing space, because of that elation, when I was pregnant, if you had told me, oh, when a mother gives birth to a dead baby, you'd be thinking, oh, she'd be bawling her eyes out immediately. I mean, I've been bawling my eyes out. I'm still bawling my eyes out. It's not that it's not there. It's definitely there, and I'm still working through my own grief. However, there are some things that happen that you just can't express to someone that hasn't actually gone through it. It can seem really unusual. Feeling so empty, like I remember the first few days, like even months later, actually, even a year later, it took me a really, really long time to get back into my body. And I had this rawness. Mm. I felt like empty when I was walking out. I'm like, do people know that I've just lost a baby? Mm. Like, it was the world for me had stopped, and I was living in this like parallel world. So I think for me, for somebody who has lost a baby, I think it's really important to just connect with one or two other safe people who maybe experienced something similar, so that you could unpack that or speak to a professional.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode and that it offered something helpful to your own mothering experience. If you are a pregnant woman or know someone who is, head over to my website to receive your free copy of the postpartum checklist and contact list. And if you'd like to be better prepared for your postpartum, both practically and mentally, Purchase the Peaceful Postpartum ebook, a 52-page interactive guide on what you need to know and what matters most in postpartum. And so that we can get these conversations out to more mothers, I'd be grateful if you could like, share, and review this podcast, and we'll see you next time.